Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. From the mouth, the palate became manifested, and thereupon the tongue was also generated. After this, all the different tastes came into existence, so that the tongue can relish them. Purport. The gradual process of evolution suggests the explanation of the controlling deities, Adideva, because Varun is the controlling deity for all relishable juices. Therefore, the mouth becomes the resting place for the tongue, which tastes all the different juices of which the controlling deity is Varun. This suggests, therefore, that Varun was also generated along with the development of the tongue. The tongue and the palate, being instrumental, are adibhutam, or forms of matter. But the functioning deity, who is a living entity, is adideva, whereas the person undergoing the function is adhyatma. Thus, the three categories are also explained as to their birth after the opening of the mouth of the Virat Purusha. The four principles mentioned in this verse serve to explain the three main principles, namely the adhyatma, the adideva, and adibhutam, as explained before. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Gena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Garun Shri Uta Parakamalam Shri Garun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Mrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Zadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So this verse is a little complicated in one sense. It's quite simple in one sense. The big problem for most of us is one main problem. What is that? That. This little thing in the mouth is the big problem, right? What do we say when we chant Sarirada Vijaja Jodendriya Taika Jiva Phale Vishaya Sagare? Right? That this tongue is very, very difficult to control. Anyone has that experience? Only one person. Congratulations, Mataji. Must just be me and you, the only ones who have the problem. And why is the tongue so difficult to control? Anyone knows? Because that's its nature. Yeah, it has its own nature, yeah. What is the nature of the tongue? Taste. Yes, very good. That's what we're discussing today. One of the functions, out of all the 10 senses, the tongue is the only one that has two functions. It's both a karmendriya. Karma means it's an activity performing sense, and it's also a gyanendriya. It's a knowledge acquiring sense. So it is the only of all the senses that has two functions. And today we're talking about taste. And tasting is a very difficult, that is, knowledge acquiring. It acquires knowledge through taste, the tongue. Or we acquire knowledge through the tongue's tasting capacity. So we know many people find it very difficult to control the tongue because they like to eat things that taste good. But often the things that taste good aren't actually good for us. Sometimes they are, but oftentimes they're not. So we like to eat. And then people have a tendency to overeat. Yes? So many years ago we had the MP of Westminster come to visit us. We gave a whole presentation, asked him, how can we serve our local community better? And as we were walking out of the building, he said, open more of your restaurants. And I said, that sounds like a bit of, like, you know, into money making or something. He said, no, it has nothing to do with money. He said, the biggest thing that the government spends money on is poor health. Poor health is the biggest thing that we spend money on. And then he said, and everyone knows that the healthiest diet is a vegetarian diet. So if you open more of your restaurants, you'll actually be helping the community because they'll be in better health. So like that. Say that again. If only they knew, yes. So like this, the tongue is very difficult to control. What is the other function of the tongue? To talk prajalpa, yes. To speak all kinds of nonsense, right? Most phone companies don't even offer a minute-by-minute plan anymore. Now it's all unlimited. So you can talk as much as you like, right? Because everyone would max out their minutes. Anyone had that experience before? Nowadays, no one actually talks. They just send messages. So no one really speaks to each other hardly anymore. But the tendency of the tongue is to speak and speak. And often the tongue rattles when it's not connected to the brain or intelligence. So it just says whatever it wants. And it's very powerful. There's a saying, something to the effect that the tongue can be mightier than the sword. They say the pen is mightier than the sword, but the tongue can also cut like a knife. Exactly. Just with one word to someone. Like if I was to say to you, Sam, you know, you, right? It would have such impact on the heart. So the tongue is very powerful and very difficult to control. So this is really, in one sense, you could say the simple essence of this verse and purport. But with the limited time that I have, I wanted to do something a little bit more with your permission, which is because we're almost at the end of the second canto, and it's like the end of a journey. Sometimes you get to the end and you think, where have I been? You know, we forget where we've come from or what we've gone through. So I just wanted to do a little bit of a kind of review of the second canto. And also I think there are a few of you who are kind of brand new here. So it might be good to set the scene a little bit with the Bhagavatam. And I wanted to do that by doing some reading. Now, the challenge is when you read, the mind starts to think, this is like when I was a little kid and I used to go to bed and my grandma, Nani Ma, would read to me at nighttime and like, I'm cuddled up. And then you'll start to like go to sleep. But we're going to request you to please be in a meditative state, because the things that I'm going to read are really going to set a beautiful scene for the Bhagavatam. So I wanted to read from The Mysteries of Creation, which is the Brilliant as the Sun series by Krishna Dharma Prabhu and Mother Chintamani Dham. Anyone's familiar with these books? Okay, only two persons and a couple of persons nodding. So yeah, so these are really, really wonderful books, Krishna Dharma Prabhu and Mother Chintamani Dham. They took to, you could say, not rewriting the Bhagavatam, but writing it in a narrative that allows you to read the entire thing and really get an understanding of the setting of the Bhagavatam. And of course, when you do that, sometimes you use poetic license. But most things that they do, they will try to connect directly to either statements from the Acharyas or what Srila Prabhupada has put in the book. So I'm going to start at the beginning, which is the beginning of the second canto. And the second canto is very important, especially at the beginning, because the second canto is... Now, the first canto is 19 chapters, I think. 19 chapters, huge book. But Shukadev Goswami doesn't speak in the entire first canto. He only speaks at the beginning of the second canto. This is where Shukadev Goswami begins to speak directly to Parikshit Maharaj. And they set the scene very nicely. So if you can bear with me. Looks like a few of you may have had a late night and an early morning. But yeah, try to hold your eyes open a little bit. So this is a little bit to set the scene of the Bhagavatam. King Parikshit is a great king who's been cursed to die in 7 days. So I was just speaking with one devotee and he said, we don't know how long we're going to live. And I said, yeah, it could be 10 minutes. But at least Parikshit Maharaj knew he had 7 days. So if you know you've got 7 days, then at least you can get working, you know, do what you need to do. Most of us think we have forever, so we wait till the fag end of life, as Srila Prabhupada would say, to do something. So I'll just read. Arriving at the banks of the Ganges, accompanied by several court brahmanas, Parikshit resolved that he would abstain from food, drink, and even fast until death. He was determined to use every remaining moment of his life remembering Krishna. So he had 7 days to live, and what's he going to do? Remember Krishna. Whenever his mind wavered to thoughts of his family or kingdom, he resolutely brought it back to Krishna. The gods, aware of Parikshit's decision, continually scattered flowers over the earth and beat celestial drums in his honor. As he sat like a great mystic in meditation on the bank of the Ganges, many sages and their disciples arrived there on the pretext of a pilgrimage. Great devotees like Vishishta, Parashara, Vishvamitra, Pipalada, Devala, Parashuram, Artishena, Maitreya, Vyasadeva, Narada, and many others flew in through the airways by their mystic powers. They knew that saints of Parikshit's caliber rarely appeared on earth, knowing he would soon return to Krishna's personal abode, Goloka. They were eager to see him before his departure. Great ascetics like Gotamya, Chaivana, Uttaya, Indra Pramada, Idmamahu, Medatiti, Bharadwaj, and Saradwan also arrived, desiring to assist Parikshit to attain salvation. Parikshit greeted the sages by bowing his head to the ground before them. He thanked them for coming and praised their magnanimity. When they were seated, Parikshit said, O trustworthy brahmanas, please tell me what I should do now. Indeed, tell me the highest duty of everyone in all circumstances, and specifically for those who are about to die. So all these sadhus appeared, and Parikshit Maharaj just wants to know, what am I supposed to do? what's the best thing for me now on the verge of death? Narada strung a gentle melody on his veena. My dear king, simply relish singing Krishna's holy names. Haribo! Narada, let us be a little more philosophical at this critical moment, chided Gotama. It behooves us to answer this important question thoughtfully, with reason and evidence. Narada merely smiled. Turning to the king, Gotama continued, King Parikshit, only in the human form of life can one solve the problem of suffering. Therefore, this is a most essential duty. The other sages called out in agreement. Parikshit asked, Pray, tell me, wise ones, what is the cause of suffering and how can it be negated? So now you have many pages, which I'm not going to read, where they go back and forth with all the different philosophies and arguments that were being presented by the representatives of those of the Satdarshans, the different six philosophies. It's very long, so I won't read it, but it's well worth reading. And they've set this up, and in the appendix, they've put all the different darshans and explain everything. Because Srila Prabhupada says at the beginning, and it's explained in Bhagavatam, that first Parikshit Maharaj was asking these sadhus who had arrived, and they were all giving conflicting advice. So it's not uncommon amongst the sadhus to get conflicting advice. Sometimes the sadhus will disagree because they're looking at things from a different point of view or a different perspective. So Parikshit Maharaj explained that he's hearing all of these things, and most of them are speaking kind of dry speculation and philosophy. But he just wants to hear about Krishna. But he's concerned to say something like, can we hear about Krishna? Because he doesn't want to offend any of these sadhus. So the debate raged back and forth for some time. Even within the different schools of thought, there were divisions. Those who denied God's personal form had various views, and also among those who accepted Vishnu as the highest reality, there was disagreement. Some thought Vishnu's role was merely to organize and sustain the eternally existing cosmos, awarding the living entities the results of their good and bad work. Others argued that Vishnu was himself the fabric of both material and spiritual reality. As the sun began its descent, Narada again spoke. Gentlemen, this good king has only 7 days to live. He's trying to solve the problems of material existence. If we continue to argue, it will not help him. The sages agreed. They all desired Parikshit's welfare, but how could they in good conscience resolve the conflicting viewpoints? Gotama said, This is good, but who amongst us has undeniably seen the truth? Vasishtha said, Well, Narada can freely travel between the material and spiritual worlds. Surely his testimony is trustworthy. Gotama objected. Who can believe Narada? He is known to mislead those who trust him. No, I will only accept the authority of someone whose reputation is untarnished. So they go on like this. Everyone, so then it says, someone who has seen the truth is aloof from bodily pleasures and pains. And Bharadwaj gave his view. He must be able to explain the nature of matter, time, space, and mind, as well as the soul. Everyone concurred, but where could such a person be found? Parikshit's face darkened with dismay. Being of the same view as the devotees in the assembly, he was concerned that so many learned sages did not accept Krishna's supremacy. Jai Krishna. And the importance of surrendering to him. The opinions of these respected thinkers would surely influence the people in general and lead them to their degradation after death. Okay, so then. Just then, the sounds of a raucous laughter were heard in the distance. The sages looked around and saw a tall naked youth walking towards them. He was surrounded by a crowd of jeering women and children who taunted and spat at him. Some threw sticks, some threw stones at him. There were barking dogs snapping at his feet. Despite this, his demeanor appeared very peaceful and unperturbed as he steadily walked towards the riverbank where Parikshit and the sages were engaged in discussion. Idvamahu said, "It is remarkable how this youth is undisturbed by the abuse hurled at him. Such equanimity is rare. Indeed, only one who is free from identification with the body and mind could remain so tranquil in the face of such provocation." The others agreed. Vyasadeva explained that since his birth, he rarely mixed with his conditioned souls, preferring to remain fixed in spiritual trance, and explained that this is my son, Shukadev. He was perfectly self-realized even while within his mother's womb. So the sages who were expert at physiognomy carefully examined Shukadev, and there was no doubt that he was a highly elevated soul. Knowing that Shukadev was a great devotee of Krishna, the devotees also agreed to listen quietly. Vyasadeva suggested they make a solemn vow not to start another debate. Nature of devotees is to debate. Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Shishi Gorni Tai Ki Jai. They all agreed. As Shukadeva drew closer, the entire assembly stood up to greet him. The sages gave Shukadeva a seat of honor and invited Parikshit to draw nearer to him. Kneeling before the effulgent saint, Parikshit bowed his head to the ground in submission. After offering Shukadeva heartfelt glorification, he asked, "Great saint, please tell me, what are the duties of one on the verge of death? Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember and worship, and also what he should avoid." The sun was low in the sky, and a cool breeze blew, rustling the leaves of the surrounding trees. A pair of parrots cawed nearby, and in the distance the faint cries of boatmen on the river carried over the placid waters. The king and all the sages sat in expectant silence as Shukadev prepared to speak. So this is a nice setting, a little bit long, and I didn't even read half of it, but it's just such a wonderful setting that it really helps us to understand what's about to happen. So here you have Parikshit Maharaj about to leave his body, sitting on the bank of the Ganga Jamuna, and he is now welcomes Shukadev Goswami into the arena, and he's about to speak. So Shukadev Goswami begins to speak, and he says many things, but then he actually begins to narrate, because after he opens his dialogue, and the reason I read part of this is to set the scene, because it's really important to understand that Parikshit Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, when he's speaking, he's not just speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. He's not just speaking to a bhakta or to a devotee. He's speaking for the benefit of the entire assembly of personalities who've gathered there, many of whom have different perceptions and understandings of the absolute truth. So what the Bhagavatam is Shukadev Goswami expertly narrating the ultimate absolute truth, the summum bonum, but from different angles to create and generate authority for himself so that he gains the respect of those who have a different opinion or perspective. And as we heard yesterday, Kanchan Abjapur was describing this chapter as also explains the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam. But those 10 subjects are the subjects that must be present in any Purana in order to make it a valid Purana. So therefore, all of these different subject matters will be covered. Now for the devotees, they're like, let's just hear about Krishna. Why do we need to hear about, Virat Rupa and how the palate was created and the tongue and, Varun Dev, let's just hear some bhakti, But actually, if we're really on the platform of bhakti, even while we're hearing all of this, Parikshit Maharaj was relishing at every moment while Shukadev Goswami was speaking, even all the topics about creation, which happens in the second canto, then it happens again in the third canto, then it happens a little bit again more in the fourth canto, then a whole thing is discussed in the fifth canto. So in each canto, these 10 topics are actually discussed. Jiva Goswami explains to varying degrees, so like that. So after Shukadev Goswami opens and begins to speak, then Parikshit Maharaj becomes so excited. He's so happy that, Shukadev is speaking. And he asks a whole bunch of questions about the creation. And so Shukadev Goswami explains, oh, this is wonderful because actually Narada Muni asks many of the same exact questions to his father. And who is his father? Lord Brahma. And so he begins to narrate this conversation between Narada and Brahma. And this nice quote that comes out in there, that persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, manifested within their hearts in a short time. So if we take hearing and reading Srimad Bhagavatam seriously, then the Lord himself will manifest, who's already manifested here. So Parikshit, he inquires about the Jiva, Brahma, Vishnu, universal form, all of these different topics, which we've heard before. And then this Shukadev Goswami, because the Bhagavatam can be a little confusing also because it's a conversation within a conversation about a conversation between two people who had a conversation about a conversation. Everyone got that? Can you repeat that back to me? So we have the sages of Naimisharanya are narrating the pastime of Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj discussing. And Shukadev Goswami is talking about a conversation between Narada Muni and his father, Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma narrates a conversation that happened between the Lord and himself. So it's easy to get a little lost, which is why these books, Brilliant as the Sun, they keep the narrative just on cue. So it can be really beneficial to help us get the thread. And of course, we know this discussion that went on, how Lord Brahma attained his self-realization. And in this, Lord Brahma himself asks similar questions. So we get the essence of the Bhagavatam, which is a conversation of questions and answers. So Parikshit asked the questions. And then he said, this is great because Narada Muni asked the same questions. And then when he's telling the story of Narada Muni and their conversation, he tells how actually he himself had asked similar questions of the Supreme Lord. And these were the different questions. And these questions are the essence of the questions that comprise these same questions, but also resulted in what the Lord divulged to Lord Brahma as the Chatusloki, the four seed verses of the Bhagavatam, which answer these questions in essence and are the essence of the entire Bhagavatam compiled within four verses. So these are the Chatusloki. I'm not going to read through all of these because you all know them. I'm sure you could recite them off by heart. But this is the Chatusloki. We've already read through it. So then it comes back to, after explaining all this, it comes back to the conversation between Narada and Brahma and those same questions. And Shukadev Goswami explains that actually the Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. So any question you have, the Bhagavatam can answer that. And he also explains that the Summum Bonum, which is the tenth Ashraya, the tenth of the ten subjects, is the highest, and all the other subjects of the Bhagavatam are simply meant to impart knowledge about the tenth, to help us to understand the tenth. So these ten subjects here, whoops, there they are here. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are ten divisions of statements regarding the following: creation of the universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of the Manus, the science of God, returning home back to Godhead, liberation, and summum bonum. And in the book Bhagavat that Keshav Maharaj put together, this is all explained very nicely with some nice diagrams. So in essence, these are the 10 topics, like that. So I wanted to come to these, and I have 5 minutes to explain these three points. So anyone can tell me, you've heard these words before. Some can tell me where you've heard these words before. The kleshas. Yeah, klesha means miseries. Yes. One person said to me once, after coming to a few classes at Soho Street, he met us on the street, he said, "You guys are so happy, but all your classes talk about misery and suffering, and you know, and the material world is a place of suffering, right? Dukkhaliyam shashvatam, it's a place of dukkha, you know, distress." So yeah, the kleshas, adidaivam, or we would say adidaivik, adibhotik, and adiatmik, klesha. So these three terms are used there, yes? Anyone's familiar with that? How many people were like, "We have no idea what you just said, but we're still hanging in there with you, Jayak"? Okay, yeah. That was most of the people. So like that. Okay, so Shukadev Goswami and Srila Prabhupada explain these ever so slightly differently. And I'm going to do that. I wanted to read more from Brilliant as the Sun because they put it in simple terms and simple language. So just give me 1 second. Okay. So this is starting just before where we're reading today. The king's heart surged with joy. Shukadev's comprehension of Brahma's teachings inspired great confidence in him. Parikshit again became thoughtful. He knew Brahma did not take birth from a material source, having come directly from the Lord. Brahma had also personally met Narayan. So therefore he asked, if Krishna is the only Ashraya, the only shelter, then what is the position of Brahma, who is the source of all material bodies? Shukadev explained that the controlling deities like Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva are manifestations of Krishna's Paramatma feature. The Paramatma puts living beings in either the position of, the Paramatma puts living beings into the position of either Adidaiva, a godly controller of the universe like Brahma, or in the position of a controlled living entity known as Adiatma. So the Supreme Lord, through the function of Super Soul, will put the living entities into one of two categories, which are listed here. Either Adidaiva, which makes them a demigod, or he puts them as a living entity like myself. All of you are like demigods, but like me, which is just simply a jiva, a controlled. One are controllers and others are controlled. That which distinguishes the controlled living being and the controlling gods is simply their bodies, or adibhuta. So the bodies are adibhuta, meaning generally the material energy. So you have the living entities divided into two, controllers or controlled, and that's determined by their bodies. Adidaivam, Adiyatma, and Adibhuta are all interdependent. That means they depend on one another. One cannot function without the other two. One cannot function without the other two. However, all of them depend on the Supersoul, the Supreme Lord, who has no other shelter. So this is why Krishna is the Supreme, because he is the original Ashraya. He is the original shelter. And through the agency of the Paramatma, he controls like that. So that's a quick explanation of these three in terms of how it's being described here. This is from Bhagavad Subodhini. So this is also, again, very wonderful books. I've mentioned three very good resource books for studying the Bhagavatam. One is Nitai Go Premanandi. It's like Bengali wedding or something. So, oh, it's children. So the book Bhagavat by Keshav Maharaj, Brilliant as the Sun series, and then this Bhagavad Subodhini, Gauranga Darshan Prabhu. So this shows Mahavishnu, the origin, then the material nature, the pradhan. All this is described and explained in this canto of the Bhagavatam, actually starting at the fifth chapter, 2522. So the pradhan is there. The pradhan is the three modes are inactive. Then the mahatattva is where the modes start to become blended, interacting, and starting to create diversity. Then ahankara, or false ego, is created. And then in each one of these modes from ahankara, or false ego, you get the doer, which is the adidaiva. You get the cause, which is the adiatma. And you get the effect, which is the adibhuta. Can you see that, Maharaj? Barely. So like this, it's a little complicated, but basically the doers and the cause. So the cause means the living entity desires, right? The living entity desires, therefore the cause, in a sense, is coming from the desire of us, the living entity. So we have to be, as they say, be very careful what you wish for. The doer, it's enacted out by the modes of material nature, but there are controllers of the modes of material nature, and they are the demigods, the adidaivas. And the effect is experienced, well, in one sense, the effect is experienced in prakriti, or to the body, or to the external manifestation, so like that. And then you have these different lists here. So you have the mind and the 10 sense devatas. You have the 10 senses and intelligence and prana, which is life air. Then you have the 5 tan mantras and the 5 elements. And this is described here. So the tan mantras means that with the creation of ether, there is also sound. Or rather, sound is created, and therefore you need ether to carry the sound. Touch, and you need air. Form comes from fire, taste from water, as we heard in the verse, and smell from the earth. So these are the different tan mantras and elements. And then you have the 10 senses and the 10 devatas who are in charge of the different senses. So for each of the senses, there is a devata, or a demigod, an adidaiva, who is in charge of those senses. So like that. And the tan mantras, sound is shabda, touch is sparsha, form is rupa, taste is rasa, and smell is gandha. Gandha, so like that. Okay, so then, after all of this discussion, it will come to a point where Shaunaka Rishi inquires from Suta Goswami, the sages of Naimisharanya, and he says, after hearing all about creation, I want to hear about Vidura. You mentioned Vidura earlier, way back. You mentioned Vidura. Vidura was actually mentioned in the first canto. So you can, you know, when I read this, I think, yeah, they're like, okay, enough about creation. let us hear some nectar. Give some pastime. Let's hear some leela. So then he says, you informed us how Vidura previously left home, leaving aside all his relatives, and that was very difficult for him. But please speak about that. Why did he leave? Where did he go? What did he do? And so that opens up for the dialogue between Vidura and Maitreya Rishi, where they have a conversation that expands over third, fourth, fifth, sixth. It's five. So it stops at the fifth. Three cantos is the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. And we'll be coming on to that very soon. So Hare Krishna, that's it. Please forgive me for going over time. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. I don't know if we have time for... Okay. So there's time for a question or two. Who here is completely bewildered by the presentation? Okay. Okay, no one so far. All right. Yes, Prabhuji. Chetan, that's right, Chetan. I was thinking Kirtan, but it's Chaitanya. Okay, got it.
We always start.
It's on, you just have to still talk loud.
Yeah. We always heard about six senses, and this is for the first time I heard about 10 senses.
Yes, very good.
So this is something new.
What was the sixth sense?
Like touch, see, taste, hear, smell. And five senses. There are five senses.
Okay, you said six. I can tell you six if you like. I can also tell you 10, and I'll tell you 11. You know, you tell me which one you want to hear. We say six senses because it usually includes the mind, which is the king of the senses. So those senses that you just described, those are the gyan indriyas. Gyan means knowledge, and it means knowledge acquiring senses. We gain knowledge through sight, through sound, through smell, through taste, through touch. Yes? Let's leave the mind out of it for a moment. So the mind's off to the side. That's good if we can manage to do that at any point in life. Now there are five karma indriyas. Karma means activities, means action senses. And they start again with the tongue, because the tongue has two functions, taste and speech. Then you have the hands. They're also senses that you use them to navigate through the material world. That's how you move. The legs, feet, you use to walk. It's how we're mobile. So that's three. And then the genitals and the rectum or the anus. So those are the five karmendriyas. So these senses enable us to function in the material world. So that's 10. And 11 is you bring the mind back in, and then you have 11. Does that work for you? Okay. So you're going to be tested on that later. Karan, you make sure you give him that test. Okay. Anyone else? Yes. Om. Got it. Home.
So you said...
You have to speak a little bit louder because I'm an old man and I can hardly hear anything.
After Krishna created the demigods, he created, then we were created. So why was our souls put into human bodies? Because obviously they were created before us. And if the soul is eternal, then there wouldn't be anything to do with karma, because we weren't ever in the human body because Brahma created us after, right?
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably am.
That's a big question that you're asking there. But I think I've understood. Your question in essence is, why am I, as a soul, which is eternal, in a human body, when I'm eternal and I wouldn't necessarily have been in the material world before, a human body before, so why did I wind up in a human body? Which, the underlying question behind that is, how come I didn't get a demigod body? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had one devotee who came to me many years ago. He read the Bhagavatam, and he said, I heard that Dhruva Maharaj got his own planet. And he said, can I get my own planet? And that was our conversation for months when we would come together. So he'll probably get his own planet as well at the end of this life. So the point being that first important to know, yes, we are eternal, but it is quite unlikely that if we're in human bodies now, that we are only taking our birth for the first time in the material world. Because we're generally going through the cycle of birth and death for many, many, possibly millions of lifetimes. It's described in the Bhagavatam that actually, generally the first birth that one takes when they enter the material world is as a Brahma. So your first birth would be as a Brahma, and from that moment you're just going down, 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 until you get to fish life. Bloop. Bloop. Simple life. And then you go up to plants. And then you go to, what's above plants? Insects. And then reptiles or amphibians. No, probably amphibians would be before insects. Then insects. Then reptiles. Then mammals. Then humans. So that's evolution. But it's spiritual evolution, not Darwin's theory of evolution. Like that, exactly. Very nice, yeah. So so it's unlikely that we've taken birth just straight into this body unless you're a pure devotee sent directly from the spiritual sky, which might be quite possible for you, Om. The fact that you were born with the name Om, I think, is significant. So, you know, we're given that name. At one point of time, yes. Not now, though. Because the Brahma is a post, it's a position, it's not, it's a specific person, but it's a post. The engineer of the universe, that's the post. Like Indra is a post, it's a position. All the demigod services, their posts, their jobs, their services to Krishna. So they're replaced regularly by different jivas who make, you could say, advancement. But our concern isn't really to be a Brahma, because a Brahma bhuvana loke, from the topmost planet of Lord Brahma all the way down to the lowest planet, all are places of that are temporary and filled with distress. Ultimately, even Lord Brahma has to leave his body. So we want to get out of this cycle and go back to the spiritual world, to Goloka Vrindavan. So like that. Is that okay, Om? That was a, yeah. I'm controlled by the devatas, the devatas of Kala time. Yes, Nishkanch, you can ask me after. Okay, that's perfect, because everyone's probably getting eager. We've gone quite over time, and there's a big controlling deity. Krishna has many forms. Deity form, holy name, but his most attractive form is prasadam.
Let's get that.
Most attractive form. Maximum numbers come for prasadam. And the mantra, sarirada vijaja. So like that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam. Ki. Jaya.